You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 43.5 of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
This is episode 43.5, Unfinity. And we're talking about Legacy without Unfinity cards.
Most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so second episode for today.
Yeah, this is actually a run now.
Oh, we try our best. Well, this is Gin and Tonic Fuel, so...
it's gonna be a good one.
Tell us if it was a good idea, but or if it wasn't. Just tell us, just DM us on Twitter, it's @response_legacy.
But before we forget, we want to shout out our patrons, woohoo! Which are Gino and Matt Duncan. Thank you very much for supporting our content and being a subscriber to our Patreon.
If you want to get into this elite group of people who are supporting us, just consider supporting us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/response_legacy. You even get some nice things like a mug in the highest tier.
Or a sticker. And
you get exclusive rights on our Discord channel. So hit us up.
And you also can support us by buying some merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
On our merchandise store, which we apparently advertised not for the last 10 episodes, something like that.
Yeah, that's true. We always forget it, but we put the link in the show notes. It's inresponse.myspreadshop.de. I totally remembered the link.
Nice.
So I think...
that's strange.
With the Paradise Lost about, about merchandise, we're talking about a
goblins.
Pair... or dice lost.
At first we talk about the new big set on MTG's Eternal League Horizon.
Yeah.
That's basically already here. It's not the Horizon, but it's here.
Unfinity.
You have to name it by the real name.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, since when are these kind of sets Eternal legal? Can anybody tell me that?
It's actually, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure I've read somewhere that it was because they wanted but they wanted it to become to make the unsets Commander legal by default.
Okay, then keep it to Commander only.
No, yeah. But Commander and Legacy shares the same card pool.
Yeah
but I don't care. But a different
ban list.
Honestly, nobody cares.
I also don't understand it.
Why then, if they wanted to make it Commander accessible, why then don't they just say, okay, this product is Commander legal only, and that's it?
No, the problem they then have is like, they only say it's Commander legal, because then it sells better. Because
of
like
course.
The secondary market value of the cards are higher.
Yeah. This is just me speaking of a frustrated player which has to pack more or less 10 more cards.
20
new cards for each Legacy deck going onwards and onwards now. But luckily, and honestly, this is just coming to my mind, there is this nice Tularian Community College deck box that fits everything you need for a nice, perfect DVD for them.
That's so much advertising right there.
Do we get the deck boxes now? I mean,
I think February.
I
saw a picture of the professor like signing
awesome
the
pack.
First deck boxes.
He knew it. He wanted us to be prepared for these kind of events. 20 new cards for each deck fit perfectly in his new designed deck box.
And
awesome job, Professor.
And this is a problem I have with, like, Unfinity. The thing is not, like, there are, uncards legal in the format. I don't care. If they are in the rights of the card game, they play with the rules of the card game, I'm completely open for it. There are some cards that they even printed out of the original unsets into the newer standard format or something like that, like lifelink on a spell that they reworded so it's like useful and stuff like that.
Sure.
Which is like totally reasonable. The problem I have is like you give up percentage points by not taking an attraction deck and stick deck with you. You have to shuffle both of them up, present it to the opponent. He has to cut them. You put the attraction deck on the side. He cuts the sticker sheet and gives you three pages so that you have the three sticker sheets that you can play the game with. And then he has to cut your fucking deck because you also have a deck. So he has to cut three decks, basically. And this is insane.
And the next big thing is that Unfinity is, as far as I know, only English. And so they...
I don't care about the new English.
No. And so they require people to know English.
Yeah.
As the language, if they want to play competitive Legacy.
You can get the gathered wording for each of those cards. I don't care about the new
English.
No,
yeah.
Actually, that's really... one of the major problems here, because one of the most most impactful cards is the goblin,
the mind goblin,
the goblin, because in the English In the English language, there are six vowels.
In the German, there are five.
Yeah. and that's something that you don't know, actually, if you're not an English speaker.
I mean, it stands on the card.
It's written on a card, yeah.
But it just arrives in English. If you don't know English, what are you doing then?
Yeah, yeah. Ask
you
the judge.
You compare the symbols on the top.
But it's about availability for all the players.
If you know what I mean. I get your point.
That's true.
The question is, now, in all seriousness, if we can talk about this kind of stuff.
Okay.
For our listeners, why... What is the reason that we have to bring this 20 new or extra cards to every FNM? Which cards are impact every other deck in a way that you need to have the stickers at some point available for yourself? I mean, I know, I get it. If I'm playing, like said, we have a discussion on our...
Opposition Agent,
for example. If I exile the goblin and I want to play it and make mana, I need to have my sticker deck for myself.
Yeah.
But if I'm playing, let's say, a control deck, whatever, that doesn't have Opposition Agent, just a standard Jeskai control list, do I still need to bring... my sticker deck, my attraction deck to the table?
Yeah. I mean, basically...
Why? What card impacts me? This is a question I have.
It's a mulligan decision for me personally.
It's the same for me as playing Snow Basics during the Astrolabe era.
So the idea is that you're presenting the cards to your opponent is that... you might trick your opponent in saying, okay, he's might playing goblins.
It's not really tricking into he's might playing goblins.
Yeah.
But it's more into like, okay, he's not presenting a sticker deck or an attraction deck. He's definitely not playing goblins and he's not playing attractions.
And not playing opposition agent.
And not playing opposition agent. And that's definitely a lot of equity in a competitive setting to have.
I think not Nick Fit.
And not Nick Fit, yeah.
Yeah,
because Nick Fit is playing the most dangerous gamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Also, the next thing, yeah.
The attraction kind it's, of. It, this is the only attraction relevant card, right? Or is there I any mean, other one?
Peter has brewed a very nice list that he has to bring to and our.
The next FNM I will play will yeah. play attraction control.
Oh.
Which is basically like a Grixis control shell with like a few attraction makers.
Okay.
In exchange for like Baleful Strix, I play a 2-mana 1/1 that makes an attraction. Mm-hmm. At the 3-drop slot, there is an attraction maker. At the 4-drop slot, there is a really strong attraction maker, actually, that makes like an attraction whenever you cast an instant or sorcery from your hand, which makes additional value from like animating, I think, instant or sorceries from a graveyard and making it into tokens or stuff like that, which is like, yeah, ridiculous, but okay. So, yeah. I think attractions are kind of good.
How do they work, actually? Maybe you can explain.
Basically, whenever you visit an attraction, mm-hmm. you get a new attract. I know, whenever you can create attractions, which is basically
you
a trigger.
Open on them,
your,
yeah.
You open them. So you put the top card of your attraction deck mm-hmm. for constructed. And we are constructed here. You have to have at least 10 attractions in your attraction deck. Mm-hmm. And they have to be different.
Yeah.
So basically you put the top card of your attraction deck onto the battlefield. And they have like a few do's or don'ts. Basically from the dice rolled from 1 to 6. The 6 always wins. The 1 always loses. And then there are a few attractions that win on 2 counters or on 3 counters, for example. And basically they do something. There is an attraction that whenever you visit it, you draw a card. There's one that whenever you visit it, you basically scry one. There is one, you bounce target creature you don't control to its owner's hand, which is really strong, for example. There's one that makes balloon tokens, which are 1/1 flying creature tokens. A balloon token. I attack my opponent with balloons to death. There are clown tokens. I can clown my opponent to death. It's like, from flavor wise, I really hate it. From and painter said, I kind of like them because they're artifacts.
Of course.
And because they are a different card, they have to go to a different zone. Because like, for example, if your opponent meltdowns, he can get rid of all your attractions because they are artifacts. Mm-hmm. Which is also something that is good with Urza Saga.
Yeah.
Because like the Saga tokens are basically pump base of those attractions. And Goblin Velda, for example, can put those back into the graveyard. But no! They are not in the graveyard. They go to the junkyard, which is a different zone now.
What?
Yeah, because like...
What?
You can't put like those cards into the graveyard because it doesn't make any sense if they go to the graveyard, because then you could bring them back to your hand, for example, or in your deck, so they have to create a different zone nowadays. So basically we don't have the graveyard. We also have the junkyard in addition to the exile, because we need a lot more zones
and
from outside the game.
What you can do is, if you don't have an artifact out there, but you have a welder and you have an attraction, you can welder out the attraction for a card in your graveyard, for an artifact in your graveyard.
Yeah, and then the attraction goes to the junkyard, but you, as far as I know, especially with engineer, it has to work like that.
Yeah.
Because you sacked an artifact for it, you can get back the artifact from normal graveyard to the battlefield.
Do you know what I have the feeling? That Wizards is kind of secretly working with real estate companies so that local game stores have to rent bigger and bigger places to just fit the amount of people in a fucking tournament area, because they need like 5 meters of space because of there are a lot of different zones and whatever. And
we start again with a sheet like when you have played Yu-Gi-Oh before.
Yeah,
and you have played Yu-Gi-Oh before.
Not to extreme extent. Really. Okay.
But when you bought a starter deck in Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah. You get basically the fully sheet how a deck the battlefield looks like.
Yeah.
I think we have to now start to get something like this for Legacy.
Yeah.
Or Magic in general. Because like we have like there is the zone where you put your creatures in. There is a small zone where you put your lands in. There's a zone where you put your artifacts, your planeswalkers. This is the exile. This is the graveyard. This is junkyard. This is the library. There you put your sideboard. There you put your attraction deck. There you put your sticker deck.
What the fuck?
You put in your faced cards stuff like that. It's like ridiculous.
And there you put your cards that are on an adventure.
Yeah, adventure cards and stuff.
The
problem I have is like we created nowadays 3 additional zones. The attraction deck zone, which is like there is a name for it. I don't know the name for it, but it's basically the attraction deck, to call it simple. Then you have the 3 sticker fold, because like when you start the game, you have to have prepared like 10 sticker sheets at least. You shuffle them up, your opponent picks 3 of them at random, and those are the 3 sheets you get to play the game with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like ridiculous. I really hate it. I mean, there are cool... No, I hate it. I mean, in theory, there are cool things that can happen, like with the Mind Goblin, the turn 1 maxes and stuff like that. But I really hate unreliable shit.
Yeah.
Because...
The random factor.
The random factor.
Okay.
It's also like attractions. You have to roll for them every single upkeep.
Yeah.
If you visit them... Or not, or whatever happens. It's like basically when you started playing Pokemon Base Fossil, where you roll like basically nothing for damage, okay, or basically only for like status effects. And then you start playing Pokemon Base Neo, where you roll every single attack step for your fucking baby Pokemon on the other side, if the attacks hits or not, or whatever happens.
It's nothing about skill, right?
No, there is still skill involved. But it's percentages.
Percentages.
I really hate losing an important game because of like bad dice luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have a question. What do you think about Comet Stellar Pup? Do you know this card?
Yeah, I know
really
this
like
card. The design is Stella. No.
It's Legacy legal.
It's Legacy legal. I think this card can see play. It's basically a planeswalker that starts with 5 loyalty. It costs 4. And he has a 0 loyalty ability.
Yeah.
Where you roll dice. And he has like 4 different results.
Yeah.
Like it's like 1 and
2. 1 and 2.
1 and 2. 3. 3 and 4.
No, 3. Is 3. 3.
4, and 5, and 6.
Yeah, exactly.
6 is basically plus 1 loyalty and roll twice again.
Yeah.
It's 1 and 2 is like create 2/1/1 scroll tokens with haste. It's 3 is...
Return a card with mana value 2 or less from a graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, and 4 and 5 is like deal damage equal to a loyalty and then minus 2. Which is basically a card that is okay. And it can definitely perform, but the unreliability on the card is like a big issue to me. I like that it doesn't get really killed by a lot of the removal. I mean, Hydroblast is still a problem.
Sure.
And I still think that Minsk and Boo is better in that slot.
Okay, yeah.
But if we are talking strictly about Jeskai or something like that, I can see myself playing this as a one-off in like Jeskai control. Because it's like in colors, it's on theme. I don't have to splash for Minsk and Boo, and it's okay.
Honestly, for 4 mana, a 5 loyalty planeswalker, and you have the option of 1/6 of the time you get to roll twice again.
Yeah.
And each mode is actually useful.
It's okay, yeah.
Each mode is useful at any board state.
Yeah.
At any fucking board
state. Have you seen
the... No, the second one is... the removal is bad on an empty board state.
Yeah, okay. A removal is bad on an empty board state. Well, yes.
I think it's
well,
only no, creature. Sherlock. Or is it any target?
It is creature or player. So you can still hit the player. So at any board state...
So at an empty board state, the worst case is like hit your opponent for 5 in the face?
Yes. And so I'm questioning why I think this card might be actually very good.
Yeah, there are already some lists out there who are playing them.
Yeah.
But they are playing them with Will. Will is a card. It's not.
Oh, this.
Not the whole name.
This Walking Dead guy?
Or? No, it's from a commander, I think Baldur's Gate commander, but I'm not really sure here. Which basically lets you ignore one of the die rolls.
And you can re-roll the die
roll. No, you can take the highest.
Ah, nice.
And they play 4 of them and also 4 of the... I'm not sure, but there's a second card that's also... Legacy legal that does the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically have 8 ignore your dice rolls and take mm-hmm. the highest ones.
Mm-hmm.
And this planeswalker is a 4 of, and I'm not sure if it's good enough, but it's just so well. Welcome to Dice Mania. Woo! let's take a look if you're dead.
Let's play Dice Factory. Dice Factory is a cool deck.
Dice Factory is a cool deck, and I don't want to name this deck Factory, actually.
It's kind of entering Hearthstone mode, if you know this game.
I played it a lot, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of very random elements to it.
I mean, not a lot. There is variance in the game, especially with a few random elements. But... yeah, I think it's so much rolling and it's like rolling and trolling, and I kind of dislike to have some of those skill sets and magic, and especially like the extra decks.
I agree.
It's like basically you lose so much but you lose something for not presenting these decks. And I think if everyone and his and her mother will come to the Legacy event with an attraction deck and sticker sheet, you have to do something against this.
It
costs a lot of time for each and every round.
True.
And what I want to know is, what happens with the sticker sheets? Can you put them back onto the card, or
I for my side would
new cards I all for the my time. Side
would use like a paper and take those, so write the name on it, rip it up and put it in onto the card.
Yeah,
just like a token or something.
Example. That makes sense.
Or because naming a card.
You can't damage these sheets because you need them for the whole tournament. If it's a 15-round tournament, you need it like for 18 rounds if you go to the final. It's like basically bullshit.
Yeah, that's just totally dumb. I mean, I really like the idea of the unsets at first. I also...
in an unset environment.
Yeah, I also get their idea to make them more... prominent into the player base and more accessible to the players.
Yeah, because money.
No, also because they sometimes have really nice effects like Split in Half. Split in Half is, in my opinion, a totally reasonable card.
Can we talk about Split in Half?
Yeah, for sure.
What happens when you split and Sarah's Invention? No, not the Sarah's Invention.
Avatar?
No, the one that gets +5/+5.
Ascendant.
Sarah's Ascendant. Yeah.
What happens when you split in half a Sarah's Ascendant while you have above 30 health?
I read about this.
7/7?
You get 2 8/8s.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because it's like a 6/6. So you split it in half, so it's like 3-3.
And then it gets plus 5, plus 5.
But it gets the ability and gets plus 5, plus 5.
Yeah. So it's 8-8, yeah.
Fuck, that's dumb! Okay, but although that's very dumb, I still think that split in half, even if it's from an unset, it could see some play. It would be at least somewhat reasonable in a legacy environment to have it. But these sticker cards and these attraction stacks are just, in my opinion, just for unplay. How do you say this? Is unplay the right term here? I'm not sure, but for just playing with unset.
Yeah.
And if Wizards really wanted to make something Legacy legal or Eternal legal, then it just should stick to
general
cards. Split in half is,
and general zones.
Yeah, and general zones. That's true.
Or what I can say, for example, pair of dice lost is a nice example.
Yeah, you wanted to talk of this.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna end the rant. We're gonna start talking about the cards that actually impact the legacy meta currently.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as saying it will impact the format, but
I think it's a nice rebound action for those cards.
Pair of Dice Lost. It's one actually really nice design cards. It's a 5 mana. Is it actually an instant? I have no idea. I have to look it up.
It's like 3 generic and 2 green.
It's an instant, yes.
Okay.
And you get to roll 2 6-sided dice. And then you can return any number of cards with total mana value X or less from a graveyard to your hand, where X is the total number of those cards. The total of those results from the dice roll. And then exile pair of dice lost. It does say permanent or card. Sorry, it does say card. So it means
you can get lands in addition. Yeah,
you can get lands. You can get artifacts.
You can get petals.
Get riddles.
They said it can also be played in lands because it basically recoups your entire graveyard.
Could be the case. Yeah. You can, even if you roll a 2, you can
pick every land.
Every land, yeah. It's interesting for Storm, of course.
Yeah, because of petals, lines of diamonds.
As a Storm aficionado, I'm very interested in this. Rodrigo Tocores posted a list that is in bug colors instead of the normal 4 colors or sometimes Grixis colors. Past in Flames has long time been considered one of the brokenest card in Ant for multiple reasons. And Rodrigo Tocores decided, okay, let's try it with Pair of Dice Lost.
And let's try...
Completely omit red.
Let's try Past in Flames on steroids.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't go that far. But here's the thing. Past in Flames, of course, only gets or lets you flashback instants and sorcery. So rituals, maybe cantrips, and that's it. Or tutors, and that's it. But with Pair of Dice Lost, you get to return, of course, Lions of Diamonds, Lotus Petal, Lands,
Wishclaw
Talisman. Exactly. So it's kind of, if you roll nicely, a Yawgmoth's Will in a sense.
Yeah.
And for Storm, this can be huge. The downside is, of course, it costs 5 mana instead of 4 mana, which is the cost of Past in Flames. And you have a random factor implied into it. You can, the worst case is you roll a 2. The best case is 12.
And a 2 is still like 1-2 petals, a Lions of Diamond, and a tutor, for example.
Yeah.
Which is like on average, most of the time still enough to win the game.
Yeah. It equals to around maybe 3 or 4 cards. Yeah. And this usually should mean it wins the game. I can't tell for sure, of course. But I think this kind of approach is interesting.
Have you already bought your pair of lost dice?
Unfortunately not. But I really will like certainly
this. This is a play on Paradise Lost. It's so nice.
Very nice, yeah. I really like this approach because now you can completely omit red. And this is a very interesting kind of story to the Storm archetype or Ant archetype. Because in the past, usually you would play four color. And the reason to splash red was Empty the Warrens or Past in Flames. Those two cards. And now, over the last kind of years, the first card was Aive Progenitus, which kind of replaces Empty the Warrens. And now we have...
And you even have Squirrel Stone.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Kind of different story, but overall, yes. It's kind of more since the printing of Veil of Summer, of course, and obviously we have Carpet of Flowers and Abrupt Decay. Green is a very strong color to have in Storm.
And so you're basically going straight into back
now. Yes, exactly. This is the thing.
And then you can... Just simple side question here. Maybe you could do Scatterstorm with Remand and Remand on Scatterstorm and play it again.
This is actually one of the things that made Modern Storm viable.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We could also
do it for Legacy.
Yeah.
True. I mean, but a bunch of 1/1s is not as strong anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the one
we see it with Enter the Warrens.
Yeah. I mean, 1/1s are not really the kind of business you want to have.
Yeah, but the goblins with half goblin war strike, yeah.
Excellent comparison, Peter.
I actually thought about this today and probably should.
What could have been done was like printing a Squirrel's War Strike in an unset and make it Legacy legal, which would be perfectly fine.
True.
That is true.
But anyways,
fuck you, Watsy. Make the Squirrel War Strike.
This episode is brought to you by the gin-fueled three guys from Austria.
I just want my Gdexian Pro back. But anyways, Paradise Lost is, I think, I mean, testing will actually show if this card is viable or not. But I think overall, there's a really, really huge potential. Because mana bases, of course, get much more consistent and like resistant when they are just three colors as opposed to four colors, of course. And I mean, it's not really...
Yeah, the question now is, does this version of Aint completely sidestep ad nauseam and put it right into Pier?
In the main deck?
Yeah, because I think like when you play Paradise Lost, it's also like one mana more expensive, like, yeah. How's it called? Like
Passing Flames.
Passing Flames.
True.
So the mana count is getting really, really high in those lists, actually.
True. However.
So yeah, Adnazim will be way worse, especially in a Delver environment.
I think this is definitely true. However, it matters on the perspective, because right now when you play Storm or Aunt, you have Wishwood Talisman,
yeah,
as additional tutors to Infernal Tutor. In the past, what you had is actually two Past in Flames, Dark Petition, which costs 5
and mana. Gets you 3 black mana, yeah, if you have Spell Mastery.
And in this kind of decks, you still play Ad Nauseam. So,
yeah. So it was like worse before.
It was way worse before. Now it's better.
And now it gets worse again.
And now it gets a little bit worse again. I mean, the difference between 4 and 5 mana. Okay, it's not negligible. It does matter.
Yeah.
But it's not like, oh my god, it's not over the top. I can't play
Ad Nauseam. Are you playing 1 or 2? because it's like a pair of dice.
True.
It's basically the same, like the casting cost per se. If it's zero mana, then it's huge. The difference from one to zero mana is just huge, and one to two mana is just also really big.
Yeah.
But then it just...
It evens out.
The problem in the Northern decks is like the mana cost is so important because it defines how many cards on average you will get from the deck. And the problem is you have like a 5 drop in the deck, you have to stop at 6.
And the problem is
because then you're like if you're drop, going yeah. from 5 you rip a pair you have and you die
just
so yeah. it's like no, a no, pair no, no. of die
just play it real and well, just flip die. It just, if you're on 6 just like, flip it
no, 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 die.
Just no risk no fun real and flip. Just
on 6 is, it's fine. At 5 you have to stop. Yeah.
Well, actually, on 6
no risk, no
on 6 it's still fun to flip. Yeah, but
on 6 it's fine.
When you're on 5 you at 5 you have to stop. And I think the same is true actually for Paradise Lost. Because when you roll a 2-6 set of dice, the average is 7.
Yeah. yeah, with 7 from the speaking, dice, you will win the game if you have an
medium grief. Yeah. Like I mean, this is plenty enough.
With 7 from the dice, you will win the game.
An additional land.
Yeah.
Medium grief.
This is like maybe instant win. You have a bunch of rituals, a bunch of tutors, late, LED, a land.
Yeah.
Everything you need. Maybe throw a disc, cut spell in there, why not? So, everything you need. So, I think this has potential.
I'm on the side.
Yeah.
If this will bring us
but,
resurgence to Storm.
Yeah.
But
I think it will be nice to test and see if this will bring us resurgence to Storm, but...
It's also a side question.
Unless Murktide Regent is
really
on
Murktide
play,
Regent
here I think
a problem
for
Storm.
A bit of a problem.
It makes Ednosium really bad.
It's also a side question.
Well, obviously, Ednosium has always been bad against Devra.
Yeah.
It makes Ednosium really bad. Regions...
Well, obviously, Ad Nauseam has always been bad against Delver.
Grinding.
But Murktide Regions cuts you off, statistically speaking, half a turn or one extra turn that you would normally get when the Delver player has not access to Murktide Regent. So you have access to one extra turn on average, or half a turn, like if you would statistically even it out. And this matters. So more often than not, you will get an extra draw step. And this means more time to sculpt your hand, to build a hand that can fight through the interaction and win from...
especially if it's
like
that big.
The
yeah.
resources that you have. So clock is always a problem. For Storm,
yeah.
Especially if it's that big, yeah.
Especially if it's that big and if it's that backed up by interaction as well. So,
yes,
it is the most efficient clock that they are.
I think we will continue to
access
two
to.
Additional cards.
And so, in that sense,
not
yes, it does
a little
matter.
Bit on, which is like the most dangerous gamer. And the _ goblin. But I think we start with the most dangerous game, which is a Nykthet card. It's a 2/2 for 4 with Death Touch. And when it enters the battlefield, you open an attraction. And whenever it attacks, you open an attraction. Additionally, whenever you open an attraction, you get a +1/+1 count on this card. So it's basically like it comes down as a 3/3 with Death Touch. And it grows for every turn when it attacks. In addition to like the attraction making incremental value every second or every third turn. In addition, it has like the ability whenever you claim a prize, you can destroy a target permanent. Fortunately enough for us, there is only one attraction in there that makes a prize or gets you to claim a prize. It's like Bubbly the Beetle or something like that, which is something that like whenever you visit it, you put a counter on it, and then it has like 6 counter on it, you get 2 treasure tokens or stuff like that.
This is amazing.
So it's like,
what's it called again?
I have to look it up, actually.
Please look it up. I'm just loving it right now. Was it like Baldi the Beetle?
Please look it up.
Okay, Phil is short for completely blowing over.
I need this right now. You have it in your wand? Oh my fucking God.
Yeah, because I played the... thing, it's pick a beeble.
Pick a beeble, okay.
Because it's like roll a 6-sided die, put the number. Whenever you visit it, pick roll a 6-sided die, put the number of luck counters on pick beetle equal to the result, and create the treasure token. If there are 6 or more luck counters on pick a beetle, you claim the prize, and the prize is like you make 2 treasure tokens. And then you sacrifice it and open another attraction.
Nice.
Where the fuck this shit? Ah.
And yeah, there are a lot of cool cards like Trash Bin. Whenever you visit it, you mill 2 cards, then return a card from a graveyard at random to your hand.
Okay.
Which is like not that bad, actually. That's then you really have like strong. Ridiculous cool cards like Tunnel of Love. And what are other cool cards?
Have you
like
already
balloon
bought
stand?
All these cards?
No, I haven't bought them. I have to get them, but I put them together just to have access to those cards.
Yeah. How much will you pay? Do you already know this?
It's like 10 cents for each attraction, so it's like...
Okay, okay.
This would be really, really problematic if tokens would actually be very costly.
The problem is like how
really,
to get
really
access to the fucking sticker sheets.
Be very costly.
Why?
The problem is like how.
No, the sticker sheets are separate sheets in each booster pack. So you have to go to your LGS
on the cards?
And back them to look into those sticker sheets to get the sticker sheets that you need for the gameplay. Because you need like 10 specific sticker sheets to play the next card that we're going to talk about. Because you're going to be mind goblin on his nuts or something like that. Because it's like the __... goblin. Whenever it comes into the battlefield, you put a name sticker onto the card. The name sticker reaches from guacamole to mind to fairy or dusty or something like that. And you gain a red mana to add it to your mana pool equal to the number of vowels in there, which is basically U R E I
A E U I O Y.
So yeah, there are 6 of those because in German we only have 5 of
y?
Those.
That's the next dumb thing here, actually.
That's the next interesting thing, actually. So yeah, basically. This is a card that can cheat out your Maxus on turn 1 with like Ancient Tomb, Exile Seaman, Spirit Guide, Goblin, Maxus. Have fun.
And a funny thing here aside, this weekend was the Exile Now Legacy Mega Event, where they had 2 back-to-back Legacy events.
Yeah.
And in the first one we had this Turbo Maxus playing 4 of this
underscore
goblin thingy,
and it went top 4
yeah, goblin. in a over 100 people event.
Mind goblin went top 4. This
goblin
went top 4 with like event. Turbo Maxus shop. So this is definitely a card that is seeing play. It is seeing play in a tournament
over
100 people. So it's like a legit magic card. And the statement that the player made, like, I was casting a lot of guacamole goblins today. And I think this is ridiculous. So, yeah. See what we have we have a lot of guacamole in there, we have the goblin in there, and we don't want to play with additional extracts. So for our listeners, if you want to discuss with us or anything, write us in our Discord, write us in our DMs.
Slide into DMs.
Email, whatever. I think Phil is nearly at passing out from chin. We're going to have to end this episode nowadays. No.
Okay, so we can make a gentleman's agreement here. Just don't play fucking sticker cards or don't play fucking attraction decks. I think it's for the best of both worlds and for the best of the format. You can find the podcast on Twitter. It's @response_legacy. And you can find me on Twitter. It's @finnickmtg, PHINEKMTG. Also, I'm always welcoming you to join in the Austrian Legacy League website. It's austrian-legacy.com. And also, you can find everything about our weekly tournaments on @Austrian_legacy on Twitter. Peter, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. And I think we can access Daniel's Twitter @FlyingDelver.
Oh my god, are you right?
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.